On this edition of the FitCast Pulse, we talk about the ultimate exercise and the evil ways that food companies are advertising to our kids, all coming up right now. Also, this episode features music by Sabado, titled Rebound. You can check him out at subpop.com. Episode 1 of the FitCast Pulse for April 22nd, 2011. I'm Kevin Larrabee.
And apparently I'm Jonathan Fass.
Yeah, there's only two of us, so I'm not introducing anyone. We're here for the,
anyone
test.
Being me.
Yep, the test episode right. Of what we're going to be doing for the FitCast news show, where we discuss the latest and most breaking of fitness and nutrition and related news throughout the world and the universe. And we're going to do it with just John and I this week. Lee had a scheduling conflict. She's getting her teeth cleaned, which
is also health related.
It is health related, and she would be a hypocrite if she did not get her teeth cleaned. So it's just going to be John and myself, and we're going to come at you with two stories this week. We will be back next week at the regular time of Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on justin.tv/thefitcast. But our first story that we're going to talk about today is titled, In Online Games, A Path to Young Consumers. And this is an article that popped up on the New York Times, and it really popped out to me because I played a lot of... when I was in high school, I had a lot of study halls, so I ended up playing a lot of games. Like there was like Oreo wiffle ball, and they had stuff like all these Nabisco based games that were like kind of athletic, easy games that you could play with a mouse. So not necessarily that they were athletic, but they were based on sports like wiffle ball and. There was a basketball one, there was a football one, and we played, we would have competitions, with these games when I was in high school in study hall, and it was, quite a lot of fun for what they were at the time. But, the reason why this is being brought back up is because there's a, General Mills is obviously they're always trying to get their products into the hands of little kids, and little kids will tend to say they want things over and over and over again until they get them, and that tends to be the same case when it comes to the junk food out there, because to kids they don't really care about their health at that certain age, when they're not even thinking about the future. They've only been alive for 8 years, so they can't even really visualize what the future is for them health wise. So the General Mills, I guess, is come under a little bit of pressure right now because they have even more in-depth activities for kids online where they are interacting with these food products. So they're not only getting advertisements for them, but they're also doing activities that include these food products. And I'm going to take some quotes from the article, and I'll read them to you real quick. Again, this is from the New York Times, from Matt Richtel. Like many marketers, General Mills and other food companies are rewriting the rules of reaching children in the internet age. These companies, often selling sugar cereals and junk food, are using multimedia games, online quizzes, and cell phone apps to build deep ties with young consumers. And children like Leslie, which is the girl that was referenced in the start of the article, for playing a game that is create a comic game. You can actually create your own comics, but in the background is advertising for Honey Nut Cheerios. And again, they're bringing their messages through email, social networks, and effectively acting as marketers. So it's their way of getting some extra marketing into these kids. And again, I'm going to continue with some other quotes, and then we'll discuss it a little bit more. Food marketers have tried to reach children since the age of the carnival barker. but they've never had so much access to them and never been able to bypass parents so successfully, says Susan Lin, a psychiatry instructor at Harvard Medical School and director of the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, an advocacy coalition. Ms. Lin and others point to many studies that show the link between junk food marketing and poor diets, which are implicated in childhood obesity. Since 2007, 17 major corporations, including General Mills, McDonald's, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, and Burger King, have taken a voluntary pledge to reduce marketing of their least nutritious brands to children, an effort they updated last year to include marketing on mobile devices as well. So as kids get more and more of these mobile devices in their hands, whether it be like an iPhone or an iPod, iPod Touch, that you can download games and lots of free games that are based off advertising, they're also starting to try to put some regulations behind that as well to reduce the advertising towards these children. Nutrition experts say that the voluntary pledges are fraught with loopholes and that better for you, that's quoted, is a relative term that allows companies to keep marketing unhealthy options. And a lot of times what they would do is they would, instead of marketing the least healthy option, they would just market the second to least healthy option. So they were kind of saying, oh, well, we're not marketing our worst junk food. We're, you know, this is healthier, but it's only to a certain degree. I mean, it's that whole thing of just not the most, horrible thing, but the penultimate. Right.
Take two steps backwards and then they take one step forward and say, we're making progress.
Exactly. And here's some more stuff from the parents, which I think is really interesting. I think this is where the discussion gets good. They ask me for it constantly. They're hard to resist when they whine, Ms. Huerta says, speaking in Spanish through a translator. She blames her daughter's love of sugar for her dental problems, including many cavities. So she's kind of going back onto the you know, my kid always is asking for, what am I supposed to do? They always, you know, they whine and whine and whine for, what am I going to do? Not give it to them? I'm going to have to keep hearing them whine. And they also kind of go into some more of the statistics based on the marketing that is through television, but I think we've kind of talked about that in the past. And to be honest, in all, again, it kind of comes back to who do you want to blame here? Do you want to blame the companies that are marketing the food and trying to think of new and more creative ways of marketing the junk food to kids or to consumers in general? Or do you put some of this blame on the parents and say, oh, well, you don't have to buy it. I mean, when I was a kid, my parents didn't buy, like, the most horrible food. Like, they wouldn't buy the Lucky Charms, but we would get, like, Kix because they're kid-tested, mother-approved. Watch the breathing, John.
Oh, my God!
Yeah.
I'm so not breathing.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's fine, too. But again, kind of talking a little bit about this, I wanted to give you guys some examples because this has kind of continued and it's always been there. And it's with interactive experiences, whether it be video games or Happy Meals. You know, even like if you look at, or even the back of a box of a cereal box, there were games on it and stuff. Even more recently, like they've had, Burger King has had like cheap Xbox 360 games that featured the king in it, like that creepy king dude with the mask and all that stuff. Again, kind of going off like the Xbox stuff, on Xbox Live, they even have free games that are sponsored by like Doritos, but there's also games that are sponsored by like car companies like Yaris. So it's a whole game, like a racing game based on the Yaris car. Or for Doritos, they did something that was, you know, very much, you play like the Doritos chips played a pivotal role in it. To be honest, I never played it because it was kind of crap. I think this is something we're obviously going to have to deal with. It's their job to market and to sell more of their product. Of course, kids are easy to market to. You get a nice cartoon character, a good jingle, and you put it on the latest episode of Pokemon or Hannah Montana, and then you're kind of good to go. You're almost guaranteed, as long as it is a product that they try and end up liking. So, John, what's kind of your take on this? Like, do you think that there is still some blame on the parents, or is it just, you know, they got to just stop marketing to the kids? Like, this one woman in here, she's part of an organization that just wants no commercials to be shown to children whatsoever.
You know, the one thing is, if you look through the history of any kind of media culture, there's always been something like this. There's always been it started in radio, it started in television, and the degradation of society, and the all kinds of, you know, social problems stemming from the new technology and then what people were doing with the new technology. So in that sense, this is nothing new. I think what is new is the almost crisis point that we're at in terms of obesity, in terms of childhood obesity, and in terms of the nutrition and exercise problems that we have today. That's certainly not been the case any other time in our collective history, the types of the ways that we eat and the lack of exercise that we get. So although this is nothing new specifically, I think at this point, maybe we're a little bit more concerned about it, or you could argue that there's more concern for it because of the way that we're headed, and we're scientifically know that. This isn't like an argument of the moral fiber of America. This is an argument of the cost of health and the longevity and the lifestyle issues that we have today. I think, you know, I tend to go back to education. And this is the filter that I run everything through. But, you know, we talked about the mother that, well, what am I supposed to do? My kid whines. And, you know, you and I both had strong parents that didn't put up with our crap. You know, if we were kids and we wanted something and it wasn't good for us, our parents held fast. Now it seems either by because of the media and what the examples that they use of, you know, a mother saying, well, what am I supposed to do? And almost kind of choosing bad parenting as the signal for, well, this is the problem or not. But I think this is the issue when you let the children, you know, the patients run the asylum and the children making those decisions for themselves. Like you pointed out, children don't have the experience, the understanding, you know, or the knowledge to be able to make choices for themselves all the time in such ways. That's what the parents are supposed to be there for. And I'm sorry, if your kid whines, that's part of raising a child. And it's just, you know, that's just what it is. You don't give in just because it's easier, because you're setting them up for a lifetime of issues and failure. And 10 and 20 years down the line, you're going to be, you know, as the parent, you're going to be so upset that you did these types of things and you made these kinds of decisions. So I think that really needs to fall on the parents, but also the education of the parents, and therefore the education of the children too, to understand what is a good choice and what's not. The other side of things, though, is that you really – I mean, personally, I wouldn't want to be a parent today. I'll be honest with you. I mean, it's almost scary, because you can't let children just go out and play like, you know, we used to. I mean, the worst that my mother had to worry about pretty much was that I wasn't playing in the street and that I was within eyesight. Now kids have so much access to so many different things that you almost can't blame a parent sometimes when they think, all right, you know, he's playing video games for half an hour, who cares? And it turns out that he's getting bombarded by these, you know, kind of free video games that aren't so free after all. They're either taking information or they're trying to sell the child a product almost subliminally, and you don't realize that this otherwise, you know, innocuous website is actually potentially harming your child or harming your family structure, so to speak. So, you know, it's a really difficult topic. You know, where do you draw the line? What kinds of things do you decide are okay? And quite frankly, in a free society, it's very difficult to make those decisions, because even though we may all agree this is no good, this is what our freedoms allow us to do. And by deciding what is correct or incorrect, that's a really dangerous step to take, because who's making these decisions? Is it society in general? You know, is it a majority? What happens to the minority? You know, this gets into all kinds of philosophical problems, and this is why we have these kinds of problems, because we're avoiding other possibly worse kinds of problems. So I think it ultimately has to go back to that education and back to the raising of the child, to say that even though these things exist and there's nothing illegal about it or wrong about it, we should treat it like it's illegal. You know, children are raised to understand the difference between right and wrong. You don't, you know, punch another child on the school playground because that's wrong. You don't steal someone's money because that's wrong. And you don't eat this bad food because it's wrong. And I think that if you can really hammer that home by your own example, as well as the education and constant, rearing of the child as best you can, and trying to control the environment that they operate in, it's got to be your best bet.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Plus, I want to commend you, dude, that you actually found an article that's about video games and health.
Yeah,
that is incredible.
I do my best. I search for video games. No, I'm just kidding. well, I think it's still a rough situation because, we talk about the childhood obesity epidemic, and who is to blame there? Is it the food companies? Is it the government for the food that they're recommending? Or is it, the parents that are technically controlling all the food that's going into their kids? And maybe it is some kind of like a chicken or the egg thing when it comes to parents that themselves are obese and they are buying food that makes them obese. Therefore their kids are left with food that makes them obese. Mm-hmm. And again, working
and of course,
their lifestyle as well. I mean, the kids tend to, are attracted to, if my parents are hanging out and watching TV, if I'm a 9-year-old, I'm obviously not going out. I'm going to be with my parents because that's, I don't have
a
car yet.
There's a lifestyle issue. There's a socioeconomic issue, very much so socioeconomic issue. There's a genetic issue. There's a, living, where you live and geographically can make a huge difference. I mean, it's so involved. And the fact of the matter is, let's also be blunt. I mean, people know that they're not making the best choices if they're buying food like this, but at other times they either don't understand the true impact of it, or they're just unable, they feel that they're unable to make better choices because of, economics or because of social pressures or whatever it is. And that's why if this were an easy topic, it'd be answered. It'd be simple. Oh, we have to do A, B, and C, and then it's done. So it's obviously very complicated and very difficult. But it is a fact, and research has been done on this. The economic impact of not only meal variety but overall health, in general, the ability of a person to have more free time to engage in more activities and to more exercise, whatever, to eat better, have better nutrition and more options within that nutrition. So it's a really, really big problem. And it certainly isn't helped by the idea that now children are being exposed and bombarded by these types of advertisements, and really slick advertising too, that really doesn't give them a chance to understand right or wrong from it. But then again, we all grew up on Saturday morning cartoons that were full of sugar ads and things like that. So it's just a different level, in my opinion, of advertising, and maybe it's a little bit more sneaky, but it's always been there. I think the other the other side of it is that we do have to look at the idea of what else is changing. Is it just the internet that's causing this, or is that just another tool and there's something else happening that the internet and gaming and ads like this are only, a byproduct of? They're only shining a light on something that actually been occurring for a while.
Yeah, we should preface this. We don't have children, so obviously,
not that we know of.
I would only say that we can give an educated guess on what it must be like, based on my viewing of the Wonder Years. There were also lots of, advertising to kids back in the 70s as well.
Always has.
Yeah.
Always has. It's a huge industry. I mean, but there's no question about it.
But you say this is sneakier, and I don't think it is, because, again, this was around when I was in high school. Ever since the dawn of the internet, the dawn of the interaction, there's been games like this. There has been, games that have been sponsored by like Coca-Cola, where you could get like a Coca-Cola board game and stuff like that. Like, this has always been around, or like you mentioned,
it has always been around. But I think that society has changed enough that there has been some influence to why kids spend more time playing video games now or whatever. You know, like, remember when we were kids, we'd go out. I mean, I remember going out trick-or-treating literally all day. If it was a Saturday, you'd wake up, you'd be out of the house by like 10 in the morning, and you wouldn't be home till like, you know, 8 at night or something. Now you don't see kids on the streets because there's fears about, you know, the dangers and kidnappings and all kinds of stuff, real, imagined or otherwise. Now they have, like, you know, trick-or-treating in schools because that's safer. The environment is closing itself in. It's pushing children back into the house. And on top of that, now we have more TV than ever, more video games than ever, you know, more reasons to stay in the house too. So I think that this is a different scenario than it was in like the Wonder Years. You know what I mean? It's there's certainly more reasons for a child to stay indoors now, not only by, you know, again, video games, TV or whatever, but by the fact that a lot of parents are don't feel safe, comfortable with their children, you know, going out by themselves. Yeah, you can't even play outside on your street anymore, you know, and, you know, at least in certain areas. But that certainly seems to be, you know, a trend, at least, can we say? I mean, if I notice it, and like you said, we don't have children, and I see it all over the TV, all over news, you know, and, you know, this isn't safe anymore, and you can't do this anymore. And that, I think, is as much of a part of the problem as anything else is. So you've already got something that kids want to do. I want to sit and play video games. I want to text message. I want to, you know, whatever. I want to be on Facebook all day. I want to be on the cell phone all day. And they don't want to do anything activity-wise. And now parents are feeling concern or pressure or whatever to keep them indoors too.
Well, I just look at it this way. I think it's, you know, they're trying to get the advertising to the kids one way or the other. Kids aren't watching as much TV as they used to. They tend to, you know, go to the internet, or they have their iPod, or they, you know, they're watching video on the computer instead of on the TV, because we're very much an on-demand society now. We're going to, like, a YouTube kind of thing, or, you know, I want to, you know, listen to the music that I want to listen to right now. So, to be honest, like, I don't know how much kids even watch cartoons in the morning once they get past a certain age, when their parents give them a device or they give them access to the internet, where they can search for content that they want to watch instead of, like, you know, what the cable company wants them to watch.
Sure. No, I agree with you completely. I mean, it's just a different, but again, it's the same thing. Instead of plopping your kid in front of a TV, now you plop them in front of your MacBook. But it's the same idea, but now there's more access to it. And like you said, more ways to, there's more choices than ever before. Mm-hmm. Ever before. And because of that, I think it's even harder to be able to be on top of everything all at once. You know, all you have to do is turn your back on your kid for a second, and they can click on something, and they're in a 180 degree direction than what you set them out to be on. You know what I mean? Even before, I'd say, you know, if my mom sat me in front of the TV and put on Nickelodeon, I was good for hours. Now a kid can, you know, understands more of how to control that and manipulate that technology than ever before. You know, I mean, it's long since the days that we were like 8 years old trying to figure out how to get the unscrambled version of Playboy. You know what I mean? Like, dude, way was, different, well,
you,
way
you
different
could,
society.
You could try to watch it scrambled, John.
What is it? You did? You watched the scrambled?
Well, you can watch it scrambled a little bit. I mean, it's not
good. You can. You could.
It's not good.
Turns out, actually, that my parents, when we very first got cable, I forgot why my dad said, but they actually did get Playboy. It was like they had to get an extra channel or something. So it only came on after like 9 o'clock or whatever. I had Playboy for like 5 years growing up, and I never knew ever.
Oh, you did?
I was so sad when I found that out.
That's so unfair.
I was so sad. My dad, like, told me laughing at me, and I was like, I hate you.
I hope you get your kids the Playboy channel.
Seriously.
So I think the answer here is that we need to include a TRX in every box of cereal, and then kids will be fine so they can exercise indoors.
Right.
And,
but again, like, I mean, I really do believe, though, that it does ultimately fall to the education of the parents, and therefore, you know, by extension, the education of the children by the parents. You can't be on top of them 24 hours a day. That's just not a fact of reality. But if you're, you know, doing everything that you can, you know, I know the difference from right
between right and wrong. My mother taught that to me and it never left. You know what I mean? So there, you still have a lot of influence as a parent, no matter how much you think you may or may not. I think we all could agree on that we were raised by our parents and we know right from wrong because of what their tutelage was. So you still got to act like a parent.
So do you think that we're going to, at some point there will be some kind of a revolution, or do you think we're just kind of heading down the same path of like Wall-E?
See, that's scary, isn't it? I honestly think the pessimist in me does kind of feel like we're headed towards Wall-E. Because I think that the problem is with a lot of these, the other side of this argument is that if, you know, this is basic market forces and market influence. If you don't want a product, the product doesn't exist. There's obviously a demand for these kinds of things. And the problem is that things like sugary snacks and sodas and whatever, it all appeals to biological impulses. We're wired to want these things. But in a real world, in a non, you know, industrial society like this, those types of things are very rare. So it's okay to want them. You know, it's like any nutritionist that you ever hear, they don't tell you have to have 100%, you know, no sugar, no nothing 100% of the time. They say have a snack once in a while, you know, 90% compliance, things like that, because little bits of things at times, those are fine. But the problem is now we have access 24/7. They have drive-thrus in the fast food. You know what I mean? They're open late hours. What's that?
Delivery.com will deliver groceries to you.
There you go. You know what I mean? And it's like, so there's absolutely no check on those natural impulses and things that are designed to actually help us. Because obviously, this is evolution. These things are good for us by the quantities that are found naturally, you know, in our environments. But now we live in a completely changed environment, and that change has been so rapid that, you know, the forces of evolution don't catch up to that. And that's what the problem is. And that's why we're seeing all of these issues, you know, happening within the last 50 years, 60 years, whatever it is, because we're just advancing too quickly for our own bodies and our own systems to be able to adapt to.
Yeah,
that's really the problem. So I don't know that there's an answer to this. I don't know that there's really, you know, we're going to all have this monumental wake-up period. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think that, unfortunately, we're going to kind of continue along this cycle, either treading water or occasionally our head dips under. I mean, right now, quite frankly, probably if you look at the crisis that we have in healthcare and the crisis that we have in terms of our lifestyles, and even though we're living longer, although we're, you know, pretty soon it's assumed that we're actually going to have a generation live not as long as their parents, which is really scary. But the fact of the matter is that there's no stops for this. There's no reason to, and people want these things because they're wired to want them. So it really, you know, it's really a problem that's out of control, and it's out of control by our own making and our own design.
All right, so I think, you know, just to wrap it up, robots that slap food out of our mouths when we put in something that we shouldn't be eating.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
Yeah, and we need something that is kind of like Skynet, starts.
But Skynet was evil.
Yeah, so we can run away from Terminators. Right. By the way, Terminator and the Sarah Connor Chronicles just got canceled for a second time from the Sci-Fi Network after they were putting on reruns. They canceled it after 2 weeks.
Wow, that's sad.
All right, well, let's go into your story, John. Let's talk about it.
Sure. Next one we're looking at was, and it has made the rounds, like a lot on Facebook and things. It was an article again in the New York Times magazine, Gretchen Reynolds in April 15th, which was, what's the single best exercise? And this is nothing really new, because it's like, look at any blog and everyone has like, oh, this is the best exercise, whatever. But I thought this was interesting because it's really taking a lot of real experts and asking, you know, professors and what have you, and asking them what they thought that their favorite exercise or the best exercise was. And if you look into the answers, you kind of get a sense of not only where people's priorities are, but also what their areas of expertise are. So when you think about these types of questions, you realize that you're painting a picture with your own brush and with your own paint set. And I think that that's important in any type of question or article or whatever that you encounter in your days, that you're looking through the filter of what someone's background and education is. So there were a couple different answers. The first one that they talked about in the they actually talked about the butterfly stroke in swimming, which is a great exercise, but there's also some issues with it. You need a coach, you need a pool, things like that. So they really want them to look at something that that maybe you didn't need to have a ton of training in or a ton of equipment to do. First exercise provided was just walking. And I thought that was a very interesting answer. And if you look at the research, they're probably right from the standpoint of health. You know, for a lot of our listeners, people are going to probably scoff at that because it's not even exercise, what you're supposed to do. But the fact of the matter is, and as a physical therapist, I can totally agree, the difference between someone that is unable to walk either through sickness or disease or maybe, you know, paralysis or whatever versus someone that can walk, it's an amazing difference in the vital signs and, you know, their lung health, their heart, you know, cardiopulmonary health, everything. So this individual mentioned walking 30 minutes a day, because when they look at the research, the difference between 30 minutes and an hour is almost – it's almost the same thing. But the difference between 30 minutes and, let's say, 5 minutes is enormous. So if you're walking 30 minutes five times a week, you're doing an amazing amount for your health and your vitality. So that seems to be like the bare minimum, but when we're talking about the best exercise, maybe that's the definition of it. It is, what do you need to do that gives you the most bang for the buck? So it's amazing that something as simple as just going out and walking for half an hour can really do something amazing. The next one up was, what were we looking at? Was that the burpees? I think someone mentioned burpees, which I thought was awesome because – oh, the squat. Stu Phillips, actually, Dr. Phillips at McMaster talked about a squat. Great exercise. You get bone density, obviously a lot of muscle force and power out of it. So you're talking about combating, you know, sarcopenia and osteoporosis all at the same time just from an exercise. And the fact is, it doesn't need to be a loaded exercise, which is beautiful about a squat. You can think about a bar squat, dumbbells, whatever. But if you're just doing a bodyweight squat, you're doing a lot for your musculoskeletal health, for your flexibility, for your mobility, and then for factors of health and longevity. There was another one. There was the someone had mentioned a burpee. So we're kind of looking at like an advanced squat in a sense. Now we're looking at greater resistance training. We're looking at greater amounts of muscle used because now obviously we're looking at chest, arms, back, abs, stability. So a burpee, while it's more demanding and you have to probably, you know, arguably you have to be at a higher point physically to be able to do a burpee. Once you're at that point, it's a fantastic exercise. Again, it's body weight and you don't have to really have anything but a small amount of space in your house to get a really hard workout. Someone else had mentioned high intensity interval training. So we're looking at things like the stationary bike or sprinters or something like that. And now we're looking at a huge amount of aerobic capacity with high intensity intervals. We're looking at muscle force again, mobility again, and so we're almost taking that argument of walking and we're advancing that along. But again, realize that something like high intensity intervals, that's also a more advanced type of exercise. So if we're talking bare minimum, it's walking. But if you're able to walk, running intervals, things like that may be a better idea. Specifically with bikes, we're also looking at something that's low impact. So it may be more joint protective than something like sprinting. And the example given was actually for bikes. And I think that was it. Did I miss anything, Kev?
No, I think you got it all. And again, it's,
I think I did. Yeah. So we've got a couple different things. So let's, you know, what are your opinions, Kev, as far as the exercise given? what's your personal favorite here? And then what would your recommendation for the best exercise be?
I mean, I think the problem with a lot of this stuff is, you know, again, we talk about this a lot, but the industry is so diverse. There's so many different, you know, groups that have their own opinions, and those groups are, you know, very strong about those opinions. Whether it be, you know, looking at the runners, looking at the dogs that are shaking, the runners, the people that are doing CrossFit, the bodybuilders, the power lifters, you know, the people that just go in and do a spin class or do a yoga class. Like, I mean, there's so many, you know, different groups. And again, those instructors and those coaches that tend to run those things tend to have their opinions. And so I tend to hate articles like this.
Okay.
I'm usually not a big fan because, again, it's one of those things where people are very biased, and a lot of it is usually not backed by any research. It's just generally, oh, this is what I like to do the most.
But see, that's what I liked about this article, because it was. And actually, now that I think about it, burpees wasn't mentioned. That was part of the conversation on my page after I posted this, actually. But that's what I liked about this, because it did cite the research. These were people that did have reasoning behind these recommendations, and it wasn't just...
I usually hate these articles. That's why I said I usually hate these... Let me repeat that.
Oh, my God. Someone is so cranky today.
No, Marty's starting to get mad. He wants to go for his walk. But, you know, talking about what I would probably pick out of these, you know, I probably... At this point in my life, I would probably tell people to do some kind of interval training, just because that it is something that they will see immediate improvements in their health. It is something they can hopefully do if they have a bike. The problems that you're going to run into, or I should say, it can translate over a bunch of different activities. I mean, you could do a body weight circuit that is high intensity training or high intensity interval training. Mm-hmm. You can do it on a bike. You can, you know, go for a swim. You can do it in the pool. You can just do it while you're running with your dog. You can run for 15 seconds and walk for 45 seconds. There's so many different ways that you can do it. I think it's the one that's most applicable to people. And pretty much everyone in the world, or at least in the United States, has some unused piece of cardio equipment in their basement. Watch the breathing, John. Like, they'll have some kind of...
No, I hate you.
Some kind of, like, elliptical, a treadmill, a bike, whether it's a very nice Airdyne bike or it is, you know, the thing that they picked up on sale at Sears, they can probably still, you know, get a decent workout on it. If I was to pick the ultimate exercise myself, something that I think everyone should do, again, I hate that question because I don't think there is one. I don't think there, you know, there's the people out there that are going to say, oh, you should do a deadlift because it's just like you're picking up your child or you're picking something off the ground. Yeah, no, if you pick something off the ground the right way, sure. You know, some people are going to say, oh, you should do like some kind of core training, like you should be doing a plank or some kind of anti-rotation because, you know, you're always using your core and it's something that we never use because we're sitting down so much. All right, I guess there's a good, you know, there's good reasons there. You know, I really like the inverted, like a TRX or even like a barbell inverted row, because you get a lot of bang for your buck, and again, you get to do some pulling, which we tend to need a lot more of in this, you know, in the world than we do need pushing, like any kind of bench movement. But out of all that stuff, I would probably, if I had to narrow it down to one, I would probably say I haven't even written anything yet, but I would probably be a three-way tie with the push-up, the kettlebell swing or some kind of swing, and and the inverted row, because it's usually those are exercises that everyone can do without hurting. And it's something that people can tend to do, you know, relatively easily, or they're easy to modify to make it so people can do them.
I like the idea of the kettlebell swing, which is interesting because it's close. My number, if I had to pick one exercise, it would probably be an Olympic snatch. You're working every muscle in the body. It can be used cardiovascularly at higher rep, although, you know, again, you have to make sure that your form is there. But in that sense, you could use it. You could do a dumbbell, a single arm dumbbell or kettlebell snatch.
But the reason why I don't like that, John, is that most people a lot of people won't be able to do that.
They won't. Right. Which is why I kind of put an asterisk there, because that's the one that I like. Question. But by the kind of definition in the article, they would probably say it requires too much training, you know. But see, I would make the same argument for a kettlebell swing. I've seen the most awful kettlebell swings. So I think you need, you know, you need a lot of training for all those things. And we could even argue that you need a lot of training for just that simple body weight squat too that was mentioned in the article. So, you know, I think we also have to assume a certain level of competency or training for any of these things. We're not talking about bad squats, you know, and the argument could be made you could walk wrong. You know what I mean? So I think that that we have to assume a certain level of competency, that we can't just go in and say, well, that's going to be too hard, you know. But I do agree that the problem with a snatch is that level of quality. You have to really have good training to do it properly, or it can be, you know, a bad idea to do that exercise. So having said that, then the next exercise that I really like is like a stoop lift or a single leg deadlift. Basically, you've got single leg activity, so you've got a lot of core activity and hip pelvic challenge, you know, glute posterior chain type of stuff. You're still using just about every muscle in the body. You're doing a lot of posterior core and back work, which is good for, you know, low back pain, things like that. Building muscle, building strength. You can do it for high rep if it's a lightweight, for more of, you know, a little bit more of a cardiovascular intensity. And we know that weight training, at least we believe weight training, does help cardiovascular anyway. So I do like exercise like that as well. But if it's just like you and your body, then burpees or something or squat thrust, I think, is probably a really good exercise. Full body, muscle building, higher intensity, cardiovascular, and you don't need really any type of special training for it.
Cool. All right. Well, that's where we're going to wrap up this first episode. If you have topics that you want to submit to us, you can send them to questions@thefitcast.com. You can put we're going to call it the Pulse, right?
Whatever you want. I'd like to point out that after 200 freaking episodes where I never had problems breathing, all of a sudden you're hearing me breathe, and this microphone is like at eye level. Yeah. I think it's your recording crap.
Well, it's because you go... Maybe you should just turn yourself down when you're not talking like I do.
Dude, I totally do.
All right, so again, you can... My dog is eating his dog bed. That's so nice. No, he's actually eating a blanket that my mom got, this gigantic blanket that is a picture of me holding the dog when we picked him up on the first day from the airport.
Ah, that's very cute.
And he's now chewing on it.
I have a blanket from the King of Bhutan. Well, he gave us blankets. They're like, because they're in the Himalayas, so there's a really warm blanket. It's pretty awesome. And it's got all kinds of, like, you know, symbols, like Asian symbol, you know, art on it. It's really awesome.
We're going to wrap this up. All right, so you can check us out at thefitcast.com. That's where you can also check us out on iTunes, get all the episodes that we do, whether it be this or the regular Fitcast or the one-on-one stuff or the blog review. So thanks for joining us. Hopefully you can join us on justin.tv next time and participate. We'd love if you'd log in and join in the conversation, because we will be monitoring that. Thanks again, everyone, for listening. Have a great weekend. And until next time, Mortal Kombat.
You're Kevin. I'm Jonathan. That was
Kevin
us.
Larrabee.
Jonathan Fass.
Mortal Kombat.
Dude, it's so good.